Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Mark Fisher. I am an alcoholic. Today, I can say that I'm also a sober, proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a father, I've learned to be a good friend, and a trustworthy servant. That is not how I arrived here. I grew up in Western New York. Suburbs of Buffalo, New York. I was put into a pretty good family. I'm an only child. My father left before I was two, and so I grew up basically with a single mom, but I didn't really suffer anything from that. My dad went and married another woman who had a couple kids, and he had a couple more kids. I had occasion when I was growing up to visit my dad. His new wife, my stepmom, did not like me. They each enjoyed a sort of volatile lifestyle. They drank heavily, they fought often, and I found it very uncomfortable being there. He would say, "I've got five kids." But I didn't feel like I was one of his five kids. And I didn't feel like I belonged. In fact, I learned the feeling of being told I was part of a group and not feeling like I belonged there early on. And I learned to need to pretend to fit in. I gradually got less and less exposure of that, and spent more and more time living with my mom and a dog, and had really became distant from my dad and his other family. So I see myself as having grown up as an only child. My mom, gave me everything she could. She afforded me a comfortable living. She took me to church. She helped me in get through college. I mean, I did finish high school and get into college. I did well in education. I learned pretty early on that when I did well in school, my mom was happy and happy with me. She sort of gave me a lot of pats on the back. If I didn't do well, if I came home with grades that were unsatisfactory or needs improvement, which I frequently did in the deportment category, she was visibly affected and sort of made it clear that, I needed to do better for her, for myself. I learned how to feel guilty, from my mom. I remember that my mom found a Sears catalog with women's underwear section, which she presumed I was using to masturbate, and she made it clear that that was shameful activity. So I learned how to be ashamed for my mom. On the other hand, my mom rewarded me when I did well. If I finished my vegetables, I got dessert. If I got good grades, I got well. I sort of learned the whole spiel of conditional love growing up. So, those behaviors I also learned in school, because I got in trouble, and I admitted it and got sent to the vice principal and got in trouble. I learned don't get caught and don't admit what you've done. I learned to lie. Well, before I got to drink my first drink, I was outfitted with the behaviors and the reaction to life that alcohol took and distorted maximally, just warped me. I found that alcohol basically took away my moral conscience and allowed me to act, it says in our big book, extemporaneously. I wasn't fearful. I wasn't, shameful. I would do just about anything. When intoxicated and to fit in with a crowd. And later, as I went through that behaviors more and more, I found that I grew away from the church, from my moral standards. And I grew to sort of need the comfort of alcohol to deal with the guilt and shame that I felt about myself. I also learned a unique ability that for feeling bad about myself, I could transfer that to someone else. I learned to blame others for my deficiencies and my problems. And, that came in really handy in alcohol because, when I was unable to make an appointment or failed to do a responsibility or didn't fulfill a commitment, I would lie and I would blame others for the reasons that I was short. This invariably led to me becoming more and more distant from those around me because I would lie about them. I was blaming them. I pushed other people away, including, when I gradually lost friends, I had fewer people in my life. I pushed the people that were deeply concerned, who loved me, away from me. Alcohol started when I was 18, got heavily drunk, passed out, threw up, the whole nine, my very first time I went too far. And I swore that would never happen again. I blamed it on Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. Must have had an allergy to that, I thought. So I won't drink that again. And I set about a lifelong, it was sort of a course that I took to try to enjoy my drinking without going too far, and yet really having a good time of it. And what I wanted to do was to enjoy my drinking and control it. But that proved to be an almost impossible task. I started to engage in other things. I found that, inhaling a certain intoxicant like marijuana would allow me to not get nauseated and throw up. Sound like it would improve my drinking experience. I found that other chemicals would allow me to stay awake and not pass out, enhance the drinking experience. I gradually, experimented with a whole cocktail of different chemicals and dry forms of alcohol. In order to improve the experience, control it so that I could enjoy it. It just led me further and further down the rabbit hole. The rabbit hole that included more and more dubious behavior, if not deviant behavior, lying, cheating, stealing, pushing people away, getting in trouble and not admitting it, blaming others. And you know the rap. It went on and on and on. There were times that I stayed sober, that I, cleaned up, put the halo on and acted well. There were times that I could do that for an extended period of time. There were times that I could do that when needed, like to get through school, to get through exams. And so I was able to perform well and to pat myself on the back for being able to do certain things that others couldn't do. I acquired a certain arrogance about me, and that extended into my whole life. It extended to needing to win, needing to perform, to be better than others. It was a zero-sum game. If I would win, you needed to lose. I needed to put people down. I needed to win arguments, useless arguments, and the like. I really. Though I claimed to be helping people, I didn't have a kind of respect and tolerance for people that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous at all. When I honestly reflect on how I treated people, I used them. I used them for whatever I needed. At best, it was kind of a quid pro quo. I'll do for you if you do for me. But I counted that. I counted it and remembered. So, down the road, I would say, you owe me, or at least be able to think that and hold a resentment if you didn't perform the way I expected you to perform. I always wanted more. More from people, more from life. And I felt like I didn't get all that I deserved. I felt a victim, despite all that I had achieved and all the success I got. alcohol proved to be a lonely, lonely life for me. A life that, though I had success, I didn't count it very highly. I discredited myself, just like I was discrediting others, and proved to be empty experiences. I wasn't enjoying my own life. You know, one of the things I've learned in this book is you had me read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a part in here that says, God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. Well, when I got here, I didn't believe that. I believed in a God that would judge me, and I sort of cut to the chase on that and judged myself for him, that I wasn't worthy. I wasn't good enough. And before every drinking escapade, I sort of had one of my kickoffs was, well, what the fuck? Go ahead and, drink, destroy everything anyway. And frequently, I would just drink to oblivion. Near the end, my existence was existing just to drink and use. I would work, always mindful of how long it would take before I could get my next drink or hit or fix or whatever. I was living a slave's life. I had no choice but to appease the king alcohol. And it was no form of existence. I could not be true to myself. I didn't even have a self that was true. You know, I had a professional career. I had a persona that I had carried around me that was a complete facade. And then I had this other person that I was when I was drinking, using, supposedly enjoying myself, and really just drinking to oblivion. By the end, I was drinking alone. So then came Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here because there was a threat to my career. I had been arrested, and it looked like the way out of that was to go to rehab. I went to rehab once, fell back twice, fell back three times. I went to rehab before finally ending up in the Salvation Army, a stint I did for almost 6 months before I became willing. I saw what you guys had. I tried to do what you guys were doing. I was willing even to comply to what you told me to do. But it took me that long to fully surrender. Really fully surrender. I was, well, someone told me that I was too smart for my own good. I just didn't want to let go. My ego was too strong. And I clung. I hung on to, the vestiges of I can handle it. That's what my mantra was. You know, it's not that bad. I can handle it. Yeah, I've been to three rehabs, but I can handle it. Well, here's the truth. The third rehab was not my choice. It was a decision handed down by the judge who had levied on me, you can go to jail or you can go to rehab for 6 months. Which will it be? I chose the lesser of the punishment and stayed for 6 months. There's no virtue in that. I was just afraid. But from that fear, I guess I got a spark of willingness. I started going to a meeting in Kenmore called How It Works. And I would end up going there for the next 20 years. At that place, I gradually got well. I gradually not only complied to what they wanted me to be a coffee maker. I did that. And then they wanted me to be a greeter. And I did that. And I learned the value of service. I got a sponsor. And he walked me through the steps. And he, led me into a continued sobriety. So I found recovery from the enslavement, the grip of alcohol. I got free of it. It actually took about 6 months before I was thinking clearly. My early attempts at a 12-step inventory were rather pathetic. But gradually, about a year of sober living, I was able to think clearly enough to become willing and honest. and open-minded enough to listen to what my sponsor was suggesting. And I think that was the first time that I did a fourth step. I've done many since then. I have the same sponsor all these years, but I've done the fourth step inventory with different folks. I'm involved in a workshop at this time and working on a fourth step today. Each time I go through the 12 steps, I find something new about me and about God and about the relationship that we have. And that invariably brings me closer to you, where I really need to be, because it's from you that I learn. It's sort of a neat triangle, you, me, and God. The God is this force that binds us together. But I absolutely know that I can't handle it. I can't handle this thing of alcoholism on my own. That old mantra could be my epitaph if I ever go back out. I don't want it today. I need the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because I need you. In order for me to do service, I need someone to serve. And those first folks that I learned to serve were fellow alcoholics. The ones that came in the door to how it works, and I got to shake their hand. Some of them I got to hug. I learned many names. It took me a long time. They all learned my name. They would come in and they'd shake my hand, say, "Hi, Mark." It gave me a feeling of self-worth. Alcohol never did that to me. AA did that to me almost from the beginning. I felt welcomed. I felt like I had a purpose there. I felt that my life took on new meaning. I loved being a greeter. Yesterday, we had a meeting where we learned about Sam Shoemaker and a wonderful poem that he wrote called Stand by the Door. Well, that's where I got my best rewards from AA, the earliest ones and still the most lasting, by standing by the door and welcoming new people to my home group, How It Works. I became committed. I became part of a group. I was no longer alone. The trouble with personal relationships gradually melted away as I became more and more involved with Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't understand it, and I can't really explain it, except that over the years, I loved being a greeter. I loved being able to shake the hand of everybody who came to that meeting. Sometimes there was over 100 people, men like myself, in trouble with alcohol. Many of them, when they arrived, broken like I was. Many of them sober, looking well like I wanted to be. There was the full range of us that I got to shake their hand, and they all shook my hand. And that was something vastly different than I had ever learned before. I was part of a group, and I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was part of. It began to erase the feeling that I had, right from the beginning of being part of and not belonging. With AA, I'm part of, and I feel like I belong here. It was a great lift to the inner part of me, a part that I really don't know if I ever learned to know. I started drinking when I was a teenager. I never learned as an adult who I really was. An authentic self, I didn't know. You gave me a coin. It said, "To thine own self be true." And as I've collected that coin over the years, one, 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 X, one, X, X. I've got an XX V now. It has meant more and more to me that I have an authentic self that I can be true to. I have a relationship with a power greater than me, a God now of my own understanding that you helped me arrive at, that loves me and proves that I have worth and worthiness. I no longer blame others for the problems that I have. I admit when I am wrong. You taught me how to do that. There is value I've learned in doing that. It's not that it gets me in trouble. It's that it teaches me a lesson that I can learn to shape my behavior into something that keeps me out of trouble. It seems so simple, really, so apparent to me, but I lived a life of lying because I was afraid to be in trouble. I was afraid to be wrong. I was afraid to be rejected. And yet I didn't know what it was to be a part of. Alcohol really led me astray. And AA has put me on a path that I'm so grateful for, because my life has turned into something that has real value. I have relationships now that are based on tolerance and respect. You told me that love and tolerance is the code. I just sort of took that as okay. But I've learned now that tolerance means that I have tolerance for other people's shortcomings. Respect means that I have respect for people who have different opinions than me. And I don't get into useless arguments. In fact, I avoid arguments altogether. They only serve to push people away. And I want to bring people together. You taught me the value of being together. In fact, that second leg, legacy, unity, is something that I've learned to value. Because without you all being here for me today, I wouldn't have a meeting. Without there being somebody to come to my home group, I wouldn't have had someone to greet. I wouldn't have had someone to make coffee for. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do service. I wouldn't have learned how to leave the self-centered life behind that alcohol had me trapped in. And the prayer that God take away my difficulties would have remained empty and void. In the beginning, when I said that third step prayer, God take away my difficulties, I thought it was like one of the foxhole prayers that I used. I'm in trouble. Get me out of trouble. I'll be good, I promise. I've learned that it's not a foxhole prayer at all. It's not even a problem to having, beseeching God to not let me have difficulties, get them away from me. No. It's a prayer accepting my difficulties and asking God to be with me as I go through them, so that I can have a story to tell you about his way of life, his love, his power. Of my own, I have a tendency to encounter a difficulty, get upset about it, feel victimized by it, feel pissed off about it, search for someone to blame over it, and eventually find a reason to go out and have a couple of drinks over it. I have the ability to make the problem worse. That's the power I have, to make any problem that I encounter worse by drinking and pushing people away and getting into trouble and forgetting about my commitments and stepping on other people's toes, the whole gamut. But you've taught me a better way. To take that difficulty, to cheerfully accept it as a trouble that I can have God see me through. So about 5 years ago, I was a physician. I was the person who was in charge of a few clinics. I had value. I was important. And I got fired from that job. And within a week, I was arrested and charged with a crime for having committed sexual abuse while performing my duty on that job. And they threatened to take my license away. I had not done that. I felt victimized. But that's what it did. Eventually, it got put in the paper, got put on the news that doctor, head of the clinic in Buffalo, arrested for a felony charge. I was very ashamed for that having been in the newspaper. It was 5 years of legal stuff that went on in my life, during which I trudged with the men who trudged through my life with a purpose to stay sober and help others recover from alcoholism. The stuff about my license and the sex crime and all that was going on in the background. I was given a choice because I'm sober and a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was given a choice, and I chose not to make that problem worse. And today, that problem has disappeared. The charges were just dismissed. All of it has gone away. I understand as much about that as I understand why it happened. But in looking backward on it all, I see that God removed from me, the nugget of my arrogance and my ego. Knocked me down a few pegs, carried me through the ordeal, gave me a purpose to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And allowed me to capitalize on it as something that I can tell you about. God showed me a way to get to you and tell you that I'm okay, that I have been found, to be okay. I wasn't found guilty. I wasn't found anything. It all just went away. And I continue to trudge the road. Along the way, I've had good friends that supported me. I've had family that supported me. I have a woman in my life that loves and supports me. The very people that I, during my active alcoholism, pushed away, stepped on their toes, I embraced this time and held close. Because they held me close and supported me. They were like the angels that God had put in my life to see me through. Men Who Trudge, this meeting was like a purpose in my life that God put here to see me through. My own good health, and now I'm 71 years old, was something that God assured me of to see me through. I have so much to be grateful for, really. Despite having gone through an ordeal, what I have is a story that God has protected me. He has cared for me. And those that He has allowed to remain in my life have shown me their great value. There's a unity that I have in and amongst the men and women who support me, great bonds that tie us together. Not only do I have with many common perils, common background that we've shared in, but bonds of trust, love from this common purpose that we're all involved in. Purpose being to support one another in our recovery, in our life. And to take time off to remain grateful to God and to give Him His due. He's given me every breath I take, every move I make, every bond I break. I have with God, taking those steps. I've taken these steps with several men, my sponsor, with other men. I've gotten very, very close to men that I've taken the steps with. It's a value that is like into me, see. I become vulnerable, I become open, I become honest, as does my sponsor or sponsee, and we have an intimate relationship. I was a married man with kids when I got here, and I didn't know what a truly intimate relationship was because there were many things that I kept hidden from my wife, from my kids. But with those that I've gone through the steps with, I've been open, revealing, honest, forthright. And they have with me. And that bond that's fostered there, that intimacy is true love. I'm capable of loving people despite our different opinions, despite their shortcomings, despite my shortcomings. It's a love that is unconditional. It doesn't matter whether you eat your vegetables or get good grades, I still love you. I've learned to love in a different way. I've learned to lead a life that doesn't blame or count. I don't count wrongs done to me or things that I've done for others. I just seek the opportunity to be useful. And I thank God when that opportunity comes up. Because I have a life today without drinking, without using, that gives me an opportunity to feel okay, to feel good about myself, despite what's happening around me, despite the skies being gray, this the rain falling, the snow falling. I live in Hamburg, there's plenty of snow out here. We have some cold and dreary days, but it's warm and sunny in my heart, in my house. Because I live with the love of many in my life. And I have a life that has been given to me that's beyond my wildest dreams, really. There's a constant challenge for me to go and find someone to help. And that is the mission that I've given, been given here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also made me a better physician. The work I do today as a physician is to work in substance abuse and addiction. I was trained in internal medicine, so I know something about the body, but I now work in addiction and I help others who suffer from this disease. It's a mental illness, an emotional illness, a physical illness. It's a spiritual illness. And I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous that when we get well spiritually, we can recover mentally, physically, and emotionally. I can find, and I have found, a kind of emotional health. That doesn't mean that I'm not, that I don't cry. As a matter of fact, it means that I do cry. When I was a little boy, I was told big boys don't cry, or, if you don't cry, or I'll give you something to cry about. I learned to suppress my feelings. I don't do that anymore. I've learned that tears can be tears of joy or tears of sadness. But there's a real cathartic value in tears. Grieving is meant to be done with tears, and we are meant to grieve. Losses happen. I lost two cats that were with me when I was alone, that had lived with me for 17 years. I cried when I did that. That was a close companion with a pet, whether it was the dog that I grew up with or the two Maine Coon cats that I've had for 17 years. There is unconditional love. It's like no other. The dog will always, my dog was always watching over me. He was always looking after me. He gave me a glimpse of what unconditional love was like. And when he was gone, when I lost my cats, I wept. I've learned to cry. I've learned to laugh. I have real joy in my life that I have with friends. When they go through sad things, I cry with them. When they go through happy things, I enjoy and I laugh with them. I can laugh with others. You know, there was a time when I somehow felt, you know, when you were having a good time, it was taken away from me. It was envy is what it was. I could not enjoy other people doing well. This is not a zero-sum game. Life is meant to be enjoyed with us all. I treasure hearing things of other people's success. I love seeing other people that I greet when they come in the door, seeing them recover, seeing them get well. I'm looking at one right now, vaping still, but I mean, he's going to give that up and he's going to be fully healthy. I love him. I've thoroughly enjoyed watching him recover. It's the joy we get here at AA, seeing each other do well. I get to love my life and love the life that you have too. Our unity gives me shares multiplied as God has put you all in my life for good purpose, that we can enjoy life together as we trudge the road, not to happiness, the road of happiness. I enjoy being here with you because you're part of me. You're the part of me that is most valuable. We are unified under God in this common purpose. My mission to stay sober and help others recover from alcoholism is your mission too. And I delight at the fact that we're doing this work together. Thanks for letting me share my story. God bless you all.